Hello everybody and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is your weekly guide to the world of education from an Irish perspective. You can listen to or download over 350 previous episodes of Inside Education dating back to 2009 by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. On Thursday last, a new book was launched on literacy, written by Irish educator Dr. Tara Concannon Gibney. Tara Concannon Gibney is an assistant professor of literacy at Dublin City University, DCU. She's also a primary school teacher and she has worked with pre-service and in-service teachers in Ireland and in New York for over a decade. Her book is titled Teaching Essential Literacy Skills in the Early Years Classroom, a Guide for Students and Teachers, and it's published by Routledge. I spoke to Tara in advance of the launch of her book, and I'll bring you our conversation on the programme this week and next week. I first asked Tara to tell me why there was a need for a book about teaching essential literacy skills in the early years classroom.
I wrote the book for a number of reasons. One of the main things, I suppose, what I felt there was a need for it, is that there does tend to be a bit of an emphasis on skills and skills in isolation in early years classroom. Letters, words, sounds, you know, these are the things that we tend to find when we go into early years classrooms in Ireland, and a kind of a lack of meaningful contexts for learning. So children are learning all of the nuts and bolts of reading, but they're not actually becoming readers, or they don't see themselves as readers and writers because they're not seeing the full picture. They're not putting it all together for themselves. That came from my own experience from when I started teaching first, that I used to be quite skills-based because that's what I was told to do as an NQT. And I found that the children in my class would go through the paces and they would learn all of the skills. You know, I felt like I was getting somewhere. But at the end of the day, they didn't see themselves as readers and writers.
So are you talking about things like learning certain words and learning off the names of the letters? Is that what you're thinking of?
Exactly, yeah. So say, for example, when it comes to something like phonics, that the children learn all of the sounds and the names of the letters, but they don't get enough chances to actually read real text, find those letters in the text, talk about them and see them at work in a context like a big book or in a poem or something that they can actually see the point of learning all those letters or learning all those high frequency words like de and said, that they're learning them on flashcards, but they don't know why. They're just doing it because that's what you do in school. And as I said, many years ago, I found that the children felt they weren't able to read, despite a year or two of teaching them all of these things. When it came down to it, they felt that they didn't have any reading skills, which I found quite shocking. And it made me really reevaluate how I did everything in the classroom. And I brought in a lot more big books and texts, rhymes, poems, songs, so that they could see from the very beginning the point. I'm learning these letters and sounds, I'm learning these words so that I can become a reader. That if I learn these things, I can put them all together and I can read this book like teachers doing. And I found it had quite a transformative effect on the kids. They tended to be so much more engaged in lessons and so much more interested in it and so much more willing to take risks and try out reading than they had been in the past.
So if you take the example then of the big books, how would you use a big book, say, very early on in, say, junior infants?
The book kind of takes each of the early literacy skills and goes through it in terms of what we would do it in a book, because from the beginning, I suppose I call them the super seven skills, and that is your phonological awareness, your phonics, your concept-based print, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension and high frequency words. And from the start, we introduce all of those in the context of the big book. And over the course of a week, you might pick a big book, start of the week, use that big book over those 5 days, and each day you kind of teach kind of the different skills in different ways. So by the end of the week, they've had a chance to learn the different skills, but in that context of the story. So it's fun for them. They're enjoying it, but they're getting the skills at the same time. A nice balanced approach. And I suppose from my own experience, more recently when I was in the classroom, I was in a very diverse school. And I had very high numbers of English language learners. And I found that the story as a context and as a starting point for everything that we did in literacy really helped them, because they were able to engage with it and they were able to kind of learn a lot of vocabulary, but also they kind of knew what was going on as well as becoming readers and writers. And I think it was particularly important for that population. but obviously important for all children, to be honest.
You went through the different literacy skills there and listed them quite quickly. I wonder, could we take them maybe one or two at a time and just kind of find out a little bit more about them? So if we take, say, phonological awareness, now that sounds like a mouthful, but what exactly is phonological awareness?
Well, phonological awareness is kind of, I suppose, I would term it the bedrock of reading instruction, because it's the child's ability to hear and manipulate sounds in words. So a child's ability to identify rhyme or to hear syllables in words and be able to clap out syllables, or maybe to be able to hear that the word cat can be divided into k-at, and there's sounds in that, or phonemes. If a child can't manipulate sounds, whether they be larger sounds or like syllables or smaller sounds like phonemes in words, they will technically be what we call at sea with the alphabet, because they won't be able to hear the sounds in their head and they won't be able to manipulate them in their head. And so their attempts to use, say, phonics, for example, will be very challenging for them, because they might be able to look at the word and say k-at, but they're not able to bring them together. And then if you can't do that, your phonics instruction is not very useful to you, I suppose you could say. And so that's why phonological awareness is so important.
And how would you develop children's phonological awareness?
It kind of works on a, I suppose, a continuum, where we start out with developing listening skills and helping children to kind of listen carefully, doing different listening games and different activities. I try and make them thematic with the book, so that there's a link there, that it's not just a listening game out of context, that it's maybe linked with the book in some way. And then we move from listening games to rhyme and alliteration. So lots of different rhymes and songs, identifying rhyme, being able to produce rhyme, being able to identify alliteration, produce alliteration. Then we might look at sentence segmentation, be able to actually hear words and sentences, so that when they hear a sentence, they're actually able to count the words in a sentence, which to an adult or a competent reader sounds very obvious, but a lot of children don't realise that there are actually words in a sentence and that our speech is divided into words. So it can be a bit of a, I suppose, a revelation to some extent. And then we look at syllables, how to break words into syllables, how to bring syllables together into words, which is actually a very important level, because later on it has an effect on a kind of a children's ability to decode multisyllabic words and into spelling instruction as well. So it kind of is laying, as I said, the bedrock for things to come.
And how important is the link to print at this stage?
Well, the thing about phonological awareness is that it is aural and oral. So it isn't a case of the symbol being introduced. When we talk about symbols, we're talking about phonics. So it is an aural and oral skill. But when we get to the highest level of phonological awareness, which is phonemic awareness, and that's where you're actually hearing the phonemes in the word. So you're hearing the k-at. Again, it's an aural-oral activity, because the important thing is that children can manipulate those sounds in their head, so that when it comes to actually being, I suppose, presented with symbols, that they're able to actually put them together. If we jump over that step and get straight into the symbol and straight into print, sometimes it's too difficult for children, particularly children who are maybe coming into school who haven't been surrounded with books and reading as young children, and really need to develop those phonological skills first. And while all the other skills can exist alongside it, I feel that phonological awareness is really something that we need to maybe pay more attention to in classrooms for that reason.
And you mentioned listening games that can help phonological awareness. Could you give an example of one or two that would work?
So simple things, like we would do ones like an adaptation of what I call a fruit bowl game. So a traditional fruit bowl game is where the children are told that there are different fruit, and then you call a fruit and they have to change seats. So they have to just be paying attention, listening. So I might adapt that for a big book, say my reading owl babies, the big book. I might say, use the characters' names and go around the circle, and all the children have different characters' names. So there's Sarah and there's Percy and there's Bill and there's Owl Mother. And when they hear the name, they have to change seats. And when we say owls fly, all the children change seats. That's a very simple listening game. But for some children coming into junior infants, it's at a level where maybe they're at that point in time. And it's also a fun game that all the children are going to enjoy. A little bit of activity is also good, but you can tie it in with your literacy lesson very easily. So something like that, I suppose. And I have lots of different examples of that in practice in the book to kind of give people other ideas of how you might do simple listening games that make sense in the context of your lesson, as opposed to trying to dream up something that is in isolation that you're doing just for that particular sake, I suppose, as opposed to a more holistic view of literacy.
Another literacy skill is phonics. So how would you go about teaching that?
Well, phonics is a very important literacy skill. There's no denying that. In the book, I give quite a lot of detail around kind of teacher knowledge for phonics, the sort of phonics that we need to be able to teach the children so that whoever's reading the book can get that from the book, as first of all. And then to look at how you might teach it in a lesson. So usually, because I want it to be, the meaning to be first and foremost, is that if I'm going to teach the letter B, for example, I'll choose a big book that has lots of words that have the letter B in it, so that we can use the book as a starting point for, here's our new sound today, we're going to learn B. Let's see where we can find it in the book. And then the children see, oh, that's why I'm learning that letter. It's in books. If I learn all of these letters, eventually I'll be able to read all of these words and I'll be able to read a book. And I think that's important, just to have that as that starting point, speaks volumes to children. Because if we don't show them that it's in books, my experience is that the children will learn all these sounds, but they don't really know what the point is. And sometimes that can really affect then their motivation to learn and things like that. In terms of kind of moving from that, it'd be important to have a kind of a very multisensory approach to teaching a letter. So looking at how you might incorporate visual, auditory, tactile, kinesthetic learning, you know, maybe using things like sand trays for your kinesthetic, using gestures or hand signs to kind of help with the kinesthetic learning, songs for aural learning, and for obviously the visual learning is a lot of finding it not only in the book but maybe in environmental print in children's names and making it very meaningful for them.
Is there an optimal sequence in which you teach the different sounds in phonics?
It depends on your point of view. If you wish to teach it to coincide with your handwriting plan, which in a lot of ways makes sense, that if the children are going to learn the letter sound and they're going to find it in books and they're going to do all of those activities, that then they learn to write the letter. I mean, it makes sense that they would go together. But if you look at some commercial programmes like Jolly Phonics, for example, their sequence of sounds is based on the ability to blend from an early stage, but they don't tend to correspond with what would be recommended in handwriting schemes. So what I've done in my own practice is a combination of the two approaches and found a balance between the two so that I could teach my handwriting along with my phonics, but I'm also teaching them according to letter families and letters that are formed in similar ways so that it's not too difficult or challenging for the children. So I do discuss that a little bit in the book. And then I suppose it's up to the teacher themselves and the schools to decide like which is the best approach for them.
Okay, so we've done phonological awareness and phonics. What are the other literacy skills? Because you've mentioned seven altogether.
Another one would be around fluency. So fluency in an early years setting would be around kind of teaching children what the English language sounds like. And I suppose one of the main ways we teach it is through like teacher modelling, reading with expression, and then maybe linking that with concepts about print. So certain concepts about print that we might encounter are things like exclamation marks. So if we find an exclamation marks or several of them in the big book, ideally, that we have a discussion with the children about, did you notice what happened to my voice when I read the sentence with this funny little mark on the end? And having a discussion about that and then seeing, you know, well, if I took that mark away, what does it sound like? Now, if I put the mark in, what does it sound like? And model it for the children and then maybe have the children engage in echo reading where you read it with that wonderful expression because of the exclamation mark, and then they follow on from that, and then maybe even they try to read it on their own using that expression. So a lot of what we would do around fluency has to do with those concepts about print, which is another early literacy skill. They kind of go hand in hand. And from my own practice, I found it really amazing how easily young children take to things like question marks and exclamation marks and full stops when they're taught in that context of the book. It makes sense to them. And generally, when you do a lot of discussion and a lot of, I suppose, live action modelling for them in the reading lesson, it tends to take hold in their writing as well, that they see the point of using it. So, you know, I've had, you know, kids in senior infants, English language learners and senior infants, expertly using ellipsis in their writing because they've seen them in the text and they enjoy them and they understood how they worked. And so now they're going to give them a whirl in their writing. Or, you know, things like speech marks, that they see how it works in the book and it makes sense to them. And those things are so important because we often encounter children in fifth or sixth class who haven't a clue about those sort of things, and they lack fluency in their reading. You know, they have, I suppose, a robotic way of reading, and they because they don't have an awareness of the concept of outprint. Whereas embedding it in a fun and enjoyable way in the early years can really reap benefits then later on as the children move on. So those two kind of go together, and then
that's fluency and concepts about print.
And then we have vocabulary as well. So, you know, I suppose choosing big books wisely, ones that would have what we call tier two vocabulary. So words that we would encounter in books that don't necessarily enter into our conversational speech. So say for a child in senior infants or junior infants, for example, a word maybe like weepy. So that's in Farmer Duck. So a word like weepy, in Farmer Duck, it says that the duck was sleepy and weepy and tired. So 5-year-old children don't tend to say, oh, I'm feeling weepy. This is what we call tier two vocabulary. And you encounter it in the book. And because we're reading the story and we have illustrations and we're, you know, that whole context is there for the children. They can understand that word, and we can discuss that word. We can do actions for that word. We can role play it. You know, we can put it in other sentences. We can talk about it. And in this way, children are building this very important vocabulary, because that's the vocabulary that they'll need when they go out to read books on their own. They're going to encounter tier two vocabulary. So every time we have a book, we make sure that we have that as part of our planning as well. And then comprehension is another one. And oftentimes we assume that comprehension is for older children, but really comprehension begins from the earliest point that a child picks up a book. You know, toddlers can be learning about comprehension, how to understand the story, how to be able to talk about the story and engage in higher order thinking about the story. So in the book, what I do is I take a range of comprehension strategies that have been, I suppose, research studies have found that competent readers use this range of comprehension strategies, and look at a teaching model to how you might actually implement that in a junior, senior, infant class, or even up to first class, because the age range is 4 to 7.
So these would be the kind of questions that teachers can ask to promote comprehension?
Well, beyond questions, I mean, the teaching model would be what we call the gradual release responsibility model. And this is where, say, if we're going to teach children about making predictions, that we would tell them, or we would explain to them, today we're going to learn about making predictions. Making prediction is when you, you know, make a good guess about what might happen in the story based on what you see in the story, or what you've heard about the story, or what, you know, where you are in the story. And then you would model examples of predictions throughout the text, and then invite the children to make their own predictions with the text. And maybe they might even do some partner work around that. They might even do some sort of drawing and labelling response in terms of predictions. And then we'll finish off by having them reflect about, what did it mean? What were we learning about today? What was that strategy? Why did we use that strategy? And get them kind of quite metacognitive in their ability to talk about how they were understanding the text. And years ago, I would have thought, Janie, that sounds very difficult for infants. But actually, I found it very empowering. When I worked particularly with the English language learners, it was amazing to see them take hold of vocabulary like, oh, teacher, I'm going to make a prediction. They actually found it very accessible, and it really gave us a lot more to talk about with the book and got them thinking about the book in different ways, and using those higher order thinking skills, which we often maybe overlook a little bit in the junior classes. And yet those things are so important. As children move up the school, a lot of times we see huge gaps in comprehension in particular. And I think, you know, paying more attention to that in the earlier stages, and an age-appropriate way, obviously, with age-appropriate materials, can really, again, pay dividends as the children grow older, because they've learnt those strategies. And it's the same strategies whether you're teaching infants or sixth class. It's the books that change, the complexity of text. So, you know, I think it's a very important one. And I mean, in the book, mainly what I'm talking about is listening comprehension, because we are talking about large format books. We do talk about it a little bit in terms of guided reading, where the children might have their own texts, but primarily listening comprehension because of the age range.
And I think we have one literacy skill left.
High frequency words. So these are your sight words, your Dolch words. So the and the is and the was and the went. words that are so frequent in text that really children need to learn them to a stage of being able to recognise them automatically. Because if they can't recognise them automatically, it's going to kind of affect their fluency in reading. If they had to sound out the and every time they met it in a text, they would be incredibly slow at reading the text. So then kind of looking at, well, how can we teach these words? Unfortunately, you do have to give the children a lot of exposure to those words to get to a level of automaticity. So in the book, I kind of take the reader through lots of different steps that you can take in introducing a sight word, different activities that you can do to make it to fun and interesting. And I suppose always starting with finding it in the book, because if I know the words, I can read this book eventually. And that message is very important. That would be the starting point for that as well. But other activities then as well to kind of develop it in a kind of a multi-sensory way or kind of include it. And I, you know, have some classroom vignettes of practice in my classroom as well to kind of illustrate those things a little bit more as well. So yeah, they're the seven, I think.
Okay, and if we think then about putting them together, to what extent will you have children actually reading in the class, and to what extent will you, you know, have whole class instruction? How do you go about planning in the class?
Well, shared reading is by its nature a whole class instructional method. So in terms of your planning, usually you plan for across a week using your seven literacy skills. But across that week, you do have to think about the different learners in your class. So say, for example, something like phonological awareness, you probably try and include more than one level of phonological awareness because the children in your class are going to be at different levels and you want to accommodate the different learners in your class. It's designed as a whole class instruction method because of, I suppose, its capacity to kind of have whole class discussions and engage all the learners in things like rhyme and alliteration. And, you know, generally children come to school and they don't know high frequency words. So they're usually, most of them anyway, the vast majority are at that level. Then in terms of small group instruction, I do have a chapter in around guided reading literacy centres. So for when children start reading on their own and we have children reading maybe at different instructional levels in the classroom, how to organise a guided reading using level texts from the very start, I suppose, off that. Something from very simple level texts and then kind of moving up throughout the levels. So that kind of looks at how you might address that aspect of it. So that really ideally you need both of these things going on, and also quite a lot of teacher read alouds and independent reading opportunities for the children. So, you know, having reading corners in libraries, and so they have lots of opportunities to handle books and try things out in a kind of a relaxed manner as well. So all those kind of things come into our balanced literacy framework, which is kind of, I suppose, the basis of what I'm talking about in the book.
I know, Tara, another area of interest of yours is play. Mm. Can play be used for developing the literacy skills?
Absolutely. And I do have a chapter specifically around play, because I think, you know, when we're talking about 4 to 7 year olds, we have to have play in the classroom, and particularly in light of our primary language curriculum and ASTRA framework, it is really crucial that we spend time on play. In the book, I talk about the different ways you might go about developing language and literacy. Play in particular has wonderful possibilities for oral language development. And so I kind of give some examples of how you might go about planning across different types of language so that the children are expanding their repertoires, and that you're, I suppose, quite mindful about how you would interact with them in play situations so that you're actually raising their language level. So oral language obviously is really, there's so many opportunities in play. I do also give examples of, you know, opportunities for reading and writing. I mean, play is primarily about communication, and there's so many times when a pen and a paper or a pad or, you know, whatever can be used for play, you know, whether it's writing an invitation to a birthday party or a note to somebody or a letter or a sign. And, you know, these things can really be encouraged if the materials are available, if they're kind of, I suppose, if you model it for the children, if you celebrate attempts that the children make to do that sort of thing. So lots of opportunity for mark making and writing. And, you know, in junior infants, it may be a case that it's pretend writing. You know, they'll write a sign and they say that says closed and it's just squiggles. But that's the first stage of writing. That's our pre-communicative stage. So, you know, not to feel that isn't worthwhile. It's so worthwhile, because that's that understanding that I can communicate using writing, which is huge. And then for in terms of reading, I found, you know, in my own practice that there was lots of opportunities to kind of use texts in different ways. And the children would almost play at reading a lot of times. So they would do things where they would play in the house and they would read stories to each other at bedtime under a blanket, you know, pretending to play house. Or they would take out cookery books and pretend to make a cake in the kitchen and things like that. So it's about what we call intelligent resources or thoughtful resources on behalf of the teacher, that if you have those things available and kind of encourage the children, kind of the magic can happen. Whereas if you don't think carefully about resources, the opportunities for language and literacy might be a little bit reduced. And they don't have to be anything fancy. It's often things that would be around your house. You know, simple things are the best. As I said, old cookery books were always a huge hit. And the children got a lot of play and enjoyment, but also the book handling and finding words they knew and finding letters they knew, and great enjoyment out of it. So I do talk about that, those sort of possibilities as well.
And that enjoyable aspect of learning literacy came from my interview with Dr. Tara Concannon-Gibney from Dublin City University when we spoke to mark the launch of her new book on literacy, Teaching Essential Literacy Skills in the Early Years Classroom. I'll bring you more from my interview with Tara on next week's programme. In the meantime, if you want to listen to this or any of the hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education, you can go to seandelaney.com/podcasts. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from online bookstores or on request from your local library. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.